Hello and welcome to the Open Air Podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Simon Bushell. Bush, you've returned to the great British Columbia. How are things, traveling man? Mos Def once said, memories don't live like people do. But I'm curious, how are you living these days?
Tiredly, I think. I'm very tired. It's been a busy few months, but I'm glad to be back home in my own bed for a little while, at least for a few more days. I'm sure I'll be off traveling again soon.
Tried to really shoehorn in that Traveling Man song reference for Mos Def.
I was impressed.
I appreciate it. I'm glad to hear, though, that you are resting somewhat because, sir, feels like it's been a pretty mad week and we're at the end of a tennis season as well. So that doesn't make much sense, but none of this year really has. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think on this episode of Open Air, we're going to do what we normally do. It's cover stuff off the court, on the court, and end with our parting shots. But Bush, I think this week, the major news is, again, what's going to happen in Australia in a few weeks, and it's led by the number one player in the world and an interview he gave and a pretty adamant response to the question he's been getting.
Yeah, absolutely. For those who don't know the Australian government, there's a bunch of statements which came out of it which implied very heavily that if you were not vaccinated, you would not be allowed into the state where Melbourne Park is. And Novak Djokovic, the world number one, was asked in an interview about his own vaccination. I'm going to read the whole quote because I think it's important here that we sort of contextualize what we are about to discuss. So this Djokovic quote: "I have my opinion and it has always been the same. I will not reveal my status whether I have been vaccinated or not. It is a private matter. And according to our law, whoever asks you, you can in some way charge him for asking you. That is an inappropriate question. Too many people today allow themselves such freedom to ask things and condemn a person. Whatever you answer, yes, I did, maybe I didn't, I'm thinking they will twist it. The media has become, I have no word how to describe it. They spread fear and panic among people, and I don't want to participate in that controversy. I feel that everyone is hostile. Now what? I told you one of your editors can make a scandal out of it. I don't want to take part in this storm that is currently happening. I'm telling you from a sporting point of view. I don't know if I'll go. Of course, I want to go. Australia is my most successful Grand Slam. I want to participate. I love this sport. I still have the motivation. But I said why I have this motivation. That's the whole story." Now, there's a lot of words, Dev. And I think off the top, there's a lot to unpack in here. But it kind of feels like a lot of words describe something at the very core of it, which is we still don't have a clear direction whether this person is vaccinated or not. And a lot of people came out this week with the belief that this quote meant that he has not been vaccinated.
Yeah, I'm still not totally sure. I could see him. I'm not totally sure that is the case. But even if that's not, I think what I gain the most from this is someone that's still clearly wounded from how he's been covered, how he perceives he's been covered. This is someone that still clearly hurts a lot when it comes to the conversation about himself. I think it's interesting he basically predicted this firestorm as well, because a bunch of editors took his words and made this a huge story, and rightfully so. This is the world number one player. This is someone that nearly won the calendar Grand Slam and loves playing in Melbourne, maybe not going, which is a huge deal. So I think it was going to make headlines, but I'm not sure, Bush, if he is vaccinated. I wouldn't be surprised if he is. I think this privacy matter and him wanting to keep this to himself is a little bit based on some prior experiences he's had. And that's not to absolve him for maybe not taking a stand here, because I have my opinions on that, which I think I've made clear on this show, and that when you have this platform, it is beneficial to spread positive information or true information about what these vaccines do. I wish he did, but I'm trying to see this from his point of view, Simon. And I'm also looking at it in the sense that, imagine he doesn't go. This is an unprecedented situation we're talking about.
I think so, yeah. And you also have a scenario where you potentially, from quotes that have come out this week, have the top three in the world on the ATP side who are all potentially unvaccinated and who will not play in this tournament. Now, there's a lot of time left between now, as we record, and when this tournament takes place. So we can't say for certain what the makeup of that draw is going to look like. But there's a lot to read into just this quote alone. And I think the fallout from it was, I think he actually predicted it fairly well, as you said, which is that he is a lightning rod for this discussion. And in so many ways, the discourse that came out of it was a I think, fairly decent reflection of where this vaccine discussion is in a lot of ways. And I sort of pitched the idea to you earlier in the week, like maybe one of the best things that we can do, because we've spoken so much about how we both believe very strongly in using your platform as a positive in terms of spreading information and in terms of being a good ambassador and all these sort of things, is to go and look at some of the counter arguments to this within social media and find people who either agree with this quote or agree with what Novak Djokovic has been saying over the last year or so in regards to this sort of stance and opinion. So I donned the proverbial meme hazmat suit before diving into the Twitter discourse and Reddit and was fishing out various quotes.
Perhaps we don't need to read the usernames. We'll leave these people that. But I would like to say as well, though, like this was with Kyrie Irving as well. And like you see the usual right wing hucksters kind of pick up this torch now and be like, Novak Djokovic is the goddamn man. And not only is he the best tennis player, but he's a free thinker and he's thinking for himself. And I think that aspect of this is also so played out and so telegraphed that it's not shocking at all. But I think the people that you've collected here, Simon, are less that and more like from a fan perspective or from just a person on the internet who has this opinion.
Yeah, and I think it's actually really important to clarify here before we dive into some of this stuff is that I think you and I recognize that there's an element of, they talk about it in comedy all the time, right? Between punching up and punching down in terms of where power sits in a lot of ways and remembering who the powerful person is in this regard. And the powerful person is the world number one, you know, the multimillionaire with all the endorsement deals, the one who has the massive platform and the ability to organize tournaments and have meetings with, you know, heads of states. Like, this is the powerful person. Someone on Twitter who is, you know, just stating their opinion about some issue in regards to vaccinations. I mean, they have some power, but nowhere near the same. So I kind of get a little nervous and a little uneasy when, because you see all the time as well, and maybe someone's going to take an issue with this stance, but I think it's fair, is that I find myself getting very nervous at things like late night talk shows and things like The Daily Show, where it's effectively just laughing at the stupidity of people that you don't share the political belief with and effectively like just making fun of them. And sometimes it's at lawmakers and all that sort of stuff, but by and large, it's a class of people that like to sort of spread sort of the level of elitism.
And perhaps there was an era for that. And I think probably I indulged in some of that content at that time, but I can personally say as well that I'm far beyond that. Like I don't want to feel embarrassed or have like anxiety for someone else because they're talking trash and being made fun of for it. I also think Simon, like the numbers that have come out, Novak is not alone here. Like 65% vaccinated on the ATP estimated, 60% on the WTA. That's not great at all. That's terrible. Like we're talking about individual players in the big four sports. Like we know them by name. We know that there's a guy on the Detroit Red Wings called Tyler Bertuzzi that's not vaccinated. There's a whole lot of players on both tours who are not vaxxed apparently. And I think the Danny Medvedev stuff, which we'll get to in a bit, like he touches on that, but this is not a unique situation alone to Novak. I think the reason you're seeing this sentiment and his defenders and his fans support him so vehemently along with the anti-vax hucksters is because there is still this segment that it just doesn't believe for a variety of reasons. But maybe go ahead, Simon, with some of these.
Sure. And these get broken. I try to break these down into different categories because I think there is different arguments that some of these people are making. But there is effectively like your conservative grifters, right? For lack of better phrasing, like people who will attach themselves to a reactionary point of view. So you sort of start off with this, I'm going to quote here, exactly. An individual's medical status is a private matter and not a badge of honor or risk of discrimination. There's a tweet, another one, well done, Novak. Being vaccinated is no benefit to anyone else, so it's no one else's business.
I just also want to say, Simon, as well, that they will give a blue check mark to anybody. Good Lord, who are these people?
Thirdly, I support Novak Djokovic. Nobody has the right to ask if you are vaccinated or not. I won't be watching the Australian Open. So I sort of categorize those three in, this is just conservative talking points, right? This is just simply your Atlas Shrugged crowd.
This is rally around this cause. Let's boycott the Australian Open, etc. This guy's got like seven emojis in his handle and a horrible looking profile pic that has a political slogan on it. So yeah, it checks all the boxes.
Yeah, and I think we've all been around the sort of political grifters in this capacity, and in some capacity they're easy to deal with, but they are a loud group of people who attract the attention of a lot of the press in ways that they shouldn't. Like, I think this has been beaten to death, right? But here in British Columbia, we're getting very, very close to as many people vaccinated as we possibly can. And the stories that get broken are always about a very tiny minority of people. And of course, they have power in that regard. But these are people that you shouldn't, by and large, I don't think you're going to convince. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen, right? So it's, I don't know that we need to spend a whole lot of time going down the conservative grift route here. So I think next, the best thing to do is to focus on, I think, people who effectively feel like they're in parasocial relationships with Novak Djokovic. And I'll read some tweets out here. This godforsaken country needs Novak more than Novak needs it. Extra respect, fist emoji. Novak breaking tennis Twitter for just being Novak. Don't go changing, Nole. We love you just the way that you are. And I think this is the most telling one. I support Novak as much as a person than as a tennis player. Both Novak and Yelena treat the hashtag Nole family like a real family. They're incredible, humble, selfless, articulate, and kind people. They have strong beliefs and principles and won't do or say something just to appease the media. All right, so the Nole family stuff, you see hallmarks in all sorts of parasocial relationships, right? Which is this idea of a family and this idea that we're all in this together, and it's us against the world. For starters, just, I guess, a reminder to all these people who spoke, you don't know this guy.
Right.
You simply don't know who he is.
Yeah, I will say, and I saw this week as well, like, Nole brought like one of his biggest Twitter fans to like practice with him and hang out with him in Belgrade and like hang out with his team. And I thought that was very unique and interesting and very Novak Djokovic, if that makes sense. And it also plays into this kind of aspect of like, he gets them. I think this is the more fascinating aspect, Simon, because it is less, it's obviously the grifter angle has been well discussed, but I think this is brought down to devotion, and Novak is beyond tennis for these people. And he's not the first athlete to do that, right? We've seen this happen many times, but I think that's perhaps why us parsing Novak's words so much, like, that is why this is happening, right? Because the conversation generated is not just controversy, it's people being like, yeah, he speaks for me.
Yeah, and I think that's why I tried to sort of divide all of these things up into different areas, because you have all of these different types of people and groups all coming together to create this conversation in the way that it has happened online and create the firestorm. So when you have your conservative grifters, plus the parasocial relationships, plus the trolls, plus a class of people who just want to have a point of view about this, you create a mix where you're going to have a lot of conversation. It's not going to be particularly positive. So to kind of move on from the parasocial relationship, this is basically a class of troll who exist as well online. And the best example I found was Novak Djokovic giving tennis Twitter life again, stay press besties, which, good stuff, right? I'm totally down for that. I've been on the internet long enough to recognize this just straight up troll. So you can just ignore these people and move on. And I guess the last one is a fascinating one to me as well, because you see this in politics all the time. And someone who's just sort of got out of politics after a while is that there's a class of like pointing the head in the other direction and like asking, what about the other guy sort of thing.
Right. What aboutism for sure.
Exactly right. So I'm going to read three tweets out just here. I love the power that Novak has. He says something, Twitter goes crazy. He doesn't say something, Twitter goes crazy. He plays, Twitter is going crazy. He doesn't play, Twitter is going crazy. Admit it to yourself, guys. Problem isn't him, but maybe you. People don't know if the neighbors living next door across the street are vaccinated or not, but they are more interested in knowing if Novak Djokovic is vaccinated or not. And then lastly, I've never seen such disrespect to a world number one as I've seen to Novak Djokovic. This is nothing new, obviously. However, now the topic of vaccinations at the Australian Open, somehow he's being singled out when half the tennis tour aren't vaccinated over it. So you sort of have this sort of misdirection here. like, look at the other sort of thing as opposed to focusing on the issue here.
I mean, the last one's fascinating because I think that there's a conversation to be had here. And there's linkage towards the PTPA as well and like what the union would mean. And Novak is representing probably a bunch of players who feel this way. I think we talked the Medvedev quotes. Like, I don't, from the way I read this, Bush, and I know people have interpreted the Danny Medvedev interview 9,000 ways, it sounded to me like he is vaxxed and he'll be vaxxed because he wants to play at the Australian Open. But his anger is that they're asking Novak about this. And he's saying, quote, that we fell for discriminating against someone if he wants to decide for himself one way or another, whether he wants to be vaccinated or not. I'm very disappointed with the world, society at this moment, and the way in which the media transmit and put pressure on all people. It sounds like he's backing up kind of that first part of Novak's statement. But then Danny's talking about like injury disclosures and like wanting to hide your profile and not disclose too much. He's talking like athlete speak, and it's jumbling the two. But at the end, he talks about the tournament itself and the rules itself and about the quarantine that may be in place if you're not vaccinated. Like, that doesn't seem possible at all. So I think these players, it sounds like to me, are looking at this beyond a human health thing, and it's an athletic thing. And I think this is the issue. I don't know what the hell happened educationally to get to this situation, but some of these people saying this is not about everyone else, it's about the individual. I mean, that's clearly bullshit.
Yeah.
The thing that might happen in Australia is we're missing a shitload of great players, but like, fuck off. Seriously. What? Like, what are we doing? What is this? I think I've been struggling with this, but I think I do have some empathy for the people and perhaps that parasocial relationship with Novak where they have seen him be mistreated. And I agree in some cases he has been. He definitely has been. It's been a weird narrative and the lens has been foggy at best at times. I understand why they look at Novak as someone that they can empathize with for sure. The problem with this now, and where I disagree with Novak, is that the reason you have to speak out is because there are people who love you like this. And it's no longer about yourself individually. And I think he gets that. He does so much charity work. He does all these things to make other people's lives better. He just doesn't see this as one of those ways. And I don't think that's going to change, Bush.
Well, I think that's why I tried to break down these tweets into the categories they are, because I think the result of each of those sections is a conversation that's different. Like the parasocial relationship, I think you touched on, like these are legitimately people that Novak Djokovic has a huge amount of influence over. And his ability to talk truthfully to them about what he does and doesn't do and his political beliefs actually does have real world ramifications. The conservative grifter class that attaches themselves to him, I mean, come on, that's just basic politics, right? That's going to happen. But the third part of it, I mean, the trolls are the trolls, but the other third part of it is that sort of borderline lib class, if you want to go down that route of, you know, what about these other people, while still engaging in a conversation about, no, we're having a conversation about the world number one, his position of power, and a conversation that he's had. Let's not ask questions about, you know, the world number 76.
Yeah.
Let's focus on this one area. Those people can fuck off, basically. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, do your job if you're a journalist. Let's not...
ding, 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 ding.
Just to be very, like, concise about it.
The fight has been stopped in the 10th round. TKO verdict. Perfect ending.
Oh, God. Like, Dev, I'm so fucking sick of, you know, tennis journalists being like, you know, the conversation this week has been about Novak Djokovic, but can we concentrate on the 45% of other people that are not vaccinated on the tour? No, do your fucking job. Like, analyze this one quote for what it is. Seriously.
Plenty more to learn in the coming weeks. Decisions will have to be made by many people, including Novak Djokovic. We will stay tuned to that when we come back. Tennis, real tennis, TM still being played. We head to Europe. Europe is blue, extremely blue, and Yannick Sinner loves it. We talk that. We talk about a lot of tennis in Russia, and of course, our parting shots coming up next. Welcome back to the Open Era podcast. It's that time again. Real tennis was played this week, Simon. Antwerp, Moscow. I have to say right off the top, I didn't put the two and two together of why the court in Belgium was so blue, but in the Discord, Luke, friend that he is, helped remind me that that is the hub of the European Union. It's probably in Brussels, right? But I think, I guess, Belgium in general, it's a European Union hub. It's a big part of the fabric. But did they have to make everything blue, Bush? Did they have to make every single surface, ad, player clothing? Did they have to make it all blue? I thought it was a bit ridiculous.
This podcast brought to you by Boris Johnson.
He was right. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, sure, there might not be bread on your shelves, but I think we can all agree Brexit was right.
That's really what we're trying to say here, isn't it? Is that Brexit was correct in relation to tennis colours of courts. Yes, exactly. Big week, by the way, it has to be said. Jannik Sinner won another tournament. He is the youngest player since Novak Djokovic, the aforementioned entire segment after him, Novak Djokovic, in regards to winning 5 tournaments. Quite astonishing achievement. Well, number one, baby, it's coming.
You know, players have pockets of places where they just love to play or where they find the most success. Mm-hmm. I feel like Jannik Sinner is going to eat up a boatload of titles in Europe on these hard courts because he just looks so comfortable, so fluid. And I mean, Lloyd Harris was playing quite well coming into his match at the semifinal, and it was not even a contest. Rocket Lloyd dispatched with ease, and I thought that was going to be the biggest test up until the final against Diego Schwartzman, who we'll talk about a bit later, but not close at all, Bush. A different class. He looks ready to make the leap. Should he just say, not now, to the next-gen finals and be like, I'm going to make the ATP finals, because it's still somewhat possible.
I think it would not be the most ridiculous bet in the world if he made the ATP Tour Finals that he would win the thing. I think it's not that ridiculous. Really, it isn't. Given the year, the end of the season, given all the things that could have happened. Now, I don't think he's going to make it there, but if he did, I wouldn't mind having a flyer on that.
Imagine trying to bet against him, right? I feel like that's a bad idea. This tournament in general, Bush, I think European Open, it's so ambiguous, the name. I think that's why we love it. But it's produced some good matches in the past. And it has that placement where you also have a lot of players trying to get more run because they've had weird seasons, possibly full of injuries and whatnot. And obviously, Andy Murray is one of those guys. I wrote down in our notes here, pick your match of the week. I thought Murray Schwartzman was fantastic. And again, we're talking about tests and where is Andy at physically. Few better players probably to play than Diego Schwartzman if you want to test out where you're at physically. And though he lost the match, he had a lot of chances. We're now firmly talking about Andy results-wise. And if you look at what he's done against the top 20 since Wimbledon, he's been in these matches, nearly all of them. It's not like these are complete trouncings where it's like, I have to reassess what I'm doing here. I think now Andy's talking about results and getting better and winning matches. Feels like we're in a different place mentally, Bush. It's a bit exciting, to be honest.
I saw a quote this week, which, and I'm sorry I don't have it to hand, but the essence of the quote was basically saying, this is the life of a lower ranked tennis player, which is you get really tough draws in round one and round two. And even if you play your best tennis to get through a round like you did against Francis Tiafoe, you come up against the top seed or the top 2 or 3 seeds. And it's really, really difficult. And the list is not very long of players who have actually managed to drop down the rankings and make it all the way back up, like really to the pinnacle of it. Like Andre Agassi is probably the most prime example of this, as someone who's been down in the hundreds and who's done the graft on the lower rankings to make it back up. It's just such a long way. And it's a long grind because you're just picking up points steadily and steadily and steadily. And your draws get slightly easier the higher up the rankings that you get. But it's just tough, man. It's a tough position for him to be in. I think he recognizes this in general. But if you're going to ask me match of the week, it has to be that Tiafoe match. Absolutely amazing. The drama involved in that was incredible.
Francis Tiafoe, big match player in the sense that when we talk about big game players, usually that implies they win all the time. I don't think Foe wins all of the big matches he's in, but he makes those matches special with his presence in them. And that's a unique trait. Probably harkens back to what we talked about last week in Parting Shots as well, Bush, about players who have that aura about them and who get everyone else to kind of draw in emotionally to make the match special. And he did it again. I mean, Andy Murray is obviously a perfect foil for that as well. And I thought that Instagram post from Foe afterwards was very heartfelt. It was beautiful.
Yeah, It was awesome. It was good to see. Just a fun match in general. Should be noted, by the way, Andy Murray, former champion here. That did happen in 2019.
Didn't he? He beat Stan,
yeah,
right?
He beat Stan Wawrinka.
Talking about, again, just random guys showing up at this tournament. The European Union, they have that draw. I'd just like to confirm again, I am not pro-Brexit, thoroughly anti-Boris Johnson. Just before Bush gets his talking points out to the media, and I'm being hounded. Just want to get that on the record. One more thing, European Open, we talked Next Gen Finals. We had another qualifier, Jensen Brooksby.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be playing in Turin, Bush. We've seen enough of him now since that match against Novak where he redlined beyond belief. Two impressive displays, but I mean, really solid week for him. Davidovich Fokina, he took off the court. Diego Schwartzman's a different animal. I think that level you can see is probably a bit higher from now, but Brooksby in the Next Gen Finals with Carlos Alcaraz, with FAA. Does he belong in that class, you think?
That's a good question of how genuinely good you think this guy is. I think his style of game really depends on what his fitness and his mental ability looks like. Like, this is a guy that's not going to blow you off the court in any capacity. This is someone who is monumentally solid and someone who has the ugliest looking serve on tour. Is that fair?
It's up there. It's up there. It's
pretty, pretty ugly aesthetically. It works though. It goes in. if he improves his fitness, watch out. This guy's a tough out for anyone. Goodness me. His ball striking's fantastic. His commitment to play the game style that he has, he's not going to miss a whole lot. And that backhand is about as solid as you'll find on the tour. It is very repeatable. He knows what he's doing out there. The question I have, what was one I was going to pose to you in parting shots is, where did he top out? Like, these players are really difficult to predict because you sort of know what he is, but you don't know the intangibles of it, right? Because to play like that, you have to have a certain hunger, desire, like a doggedness to you. You're sort of David Ferrer style, right? Like you've hit your limits in terms of what you can do talent-wise and in terms of game-wise, and the rest of it's just purely heart. And those are people are really difficult. If you told me Jensen Brooksby is a top 10 player, I'd believe you.
Yeah.
I think I would believe you. It's difficult, but it's like, I could see it.
And it's funny, like he's in the same birth year as FAA and Sebastian Korda. And those are guys I feel like we have a bit more tape on. So maybe we're more comfortable making longer projections, but same age. Like, it's not like he is a bit past it. I think it's definitely possible. And I feel like the commitment level and his passion, quote unquote, I see a top 10 player commitment-wise, mentally, if that makes sense, Simon, on the court.
Pro-wise, right?
Exactly. And I know he lost to Schwartzman, but there's some rallies in there where lungs are being busted and everything was out there, but you saw a guy that loved just doing that over and over again to a sinister degree, and that is what makes a top 10er. So the world is his oyster. I think that Next Gen Finals will be really interesting also in terms of who plays it. Let's head to Russia, Bush. I have this in the notes. You look at this final, you could have seen this. Don't take away the names, possibly. Take away some of the overlays from the TV. Just view it. And you might not have been mistaken for watching something from 1999 or the millennium, but Marin Cilic and Aslan Karatsov played in the final. Golden thighs, Bush. Aslan, what a year. Cool for him to win at home. I think it feels like a coronation for Aslan the Great.
Golden thighs is funny. You made me laugh. I've not heard that one. That's very good. What a year, man. Like,
right?
Insane. Insane that he carries on. I think the middle part of the year, even though his results weren't that bad, I think he did suffer a lot from the weight of what he did early on in the year. And this is a guy who really hasn't had to deal with the amount of matches he's played at this level, the fitness required to it, to really understand it. We talked about it in that last segment about Brooks being just being a pro in general, right? What it takes to be a pro repeatedly on the tour. Aslan Karatsev, in a lot of ways, still learning that, even at 27. What a win for him. Again, like, just what a year. This is why we love the sport, for a dude like this to do the graft. He didn't come out of nowhere. He played well always at that level. Again, it touches on, just to go full circle, how difficult it is to make that rise in the rankings and to get easier draws, quote unquote easier draws, that if you do make a deep run at a Grand Slam and your ranking gets boosted, you just get a few more access. You get more access, right? You get a few more main draws, a few more Masters series, a few more of these things. You're just in. So if you can win a few rounds, you just build ranking points a bit more easily and you get on a roll. I mean, he's testament to that this year.
That climb. Like I was watching the Rafa Nadal Academy documentary on Amazon Prime, which we'll talk about a bit later, but and Jaime Munar being one of the players in the Academy, and he's in that level where he's playing more challengers than ATP level events, and you're seeing just if you're not able to pile up a lot of wins in a row, you're really stuck. And like to make it out of there, it takes a really impressive achievement. And if you want to predict who's going to do well, perhaps in the year coming, take a look at who's been excelling in the challengers, because it's no small feat to be that consistently good when you're not having the best accommodations, or you're not having the best travel, not the best setups. It's pretty DIY. So I think shouts to Aslan. We love you. Apparently, this is according to Pog, correspondent Pog. There's a brand deal coming up. I'm not sure with who wants to sign him, who's Aslan going with, but it looks like there should be some gear coming. I would be stunned if it's not Hydrogen. If it's not Hydrogen, I'll eat a hat. I'll eat a hat live on air if it's not Hydrogen. That's my bold take.
Is he the right fit, though? Feels a bit too classy for that, doesn't he?
He does.
Feels a bit too
the fact. Wow. Okay. Well, there goes our box if Hydrogen's flank for that needless shot.
I'm not saying we're classy. I'm saying he's classy. Like we'll take anything at this point. We're good.
To end on a high note, friend of the show, not friend. We're fans. Annette Kontaveit. What a year! If I were to ask you, Bush, who has won the most titles, on the WTA in 2021, could you name the top three?
Ooh, good question. Ash Barty?
Correct.
Must be in the top
three. She's one.
Then it gets dicey after that.
What if I told you it's Barbara Krejcikova and then Annette Kontaveit? Annette Kontaveit winning one of the... I'm going to call this match one of the sadder finals, I think. Really early in the East Coast, but turn it on to see Ekaterina Alexandrova really cruising. She was up 6-4 for love, and then it all went to shit. 2 hours and 22 minutes later, she has lost in three sets. The sound on the match point, Bush, I don't know if you've watched this, but it's painful. Annette Kontaveit is apologizing, basically. Everyone's really sad. That being said, since Annette Kontaveit linked up with coach Dmitry Tursunov, who you'll recognize that name, he was a tour player forever, since she linked up with him, Bush, she's been fantastic. And that includes the North American swing as well. We talk about the depth on the WTA and just a bevy of high-end players. Annette Kontaveit has an outside chance, I think, of making it into Guadalajara, the WTA finals. Ange Jabeur is pulled out of a tournament, so it's possible. But we're at a point now where she might not make it into the finals because of her rankings and the ranking point freeze. But isn't that messed up? Isn't that hilarious that Annette Kontaveit after this season might not get in to the WTA finals?
I'm going to read off just the last few months from Cincinnati. So she lost to Ons Jabeur, no great slouch. She wins in Cleveland at the US Open. She loses to Swiatek in the third round. No great shame there. She wins in Ostrava, in Chicago. She pulls out. And then she loses to Ange Jabeur again in Indian Wells, and then here wins the title. That's not a bad last few months, is it not? Given the players that she lost to,
Pretty good.
Looks like all the world a top 10 player and someone that you do not want to play at the moment. Really do not want to play.
It's ironic that Ange Jabeur is the person right in front of her for that final spot, because perhaps that is fair. That is maybe the one blemish on Annette Kontaveit's sterling summer and now fall. Anything else, Simon, from this week? I think for me, I mean, really, I watched Brandon Nakashima play for the first time closely, which was fun. I think that the part I like about this time of the tour is that you can kind of zero in on players that you were intrigued by a bit earlier in the season.
Yeah, and I guess we didn't touch on it too much, right? Other than sort of tongue-in-cheek saying about Sinner that he would have an outside run at making the World Tour Finals and doing well there. But there is a coldness to the way that he just moves through these fields, just mowing through people with just expert efficiency. You look at the last three matches that he played in the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. Dude dropped across three matches like 12 games. just did not look in trouble at any point. And you know there's a really, I mean like really, really good player in there when you just make a 250 event look like an absolute joke to you when you're playing against someone like Diego Schwartzman in the final.
That's the most shocking part, right? Like Schwartzman has the ability to do that to other players in this kind of ranking sphere where you're having maybe top 20 guys playing against people in the 70s or 80s. Schwartzman has the ability to make people look rather ordinary, and yet Yannick Sinner can do that to him. I think Diego Schwartzman, as much as he has gotten out of his ability, like I think if Ricardo Piatti and his coaches are looking as this like a progressive track and a kind of a line to measure, everything is trending properly. And it looks so to the plan to what you're saying, Simon, just the way he's interacting with his coaches during matches as well. It's so calm and almost upsettingly just neutral, and he's just executing everything perfectly. I would be scared. And I think, again, and I think this was alluded to by the commentators a bit this week, a lot of it was about, well, what is he doing to get ready for these big matches that will come when he undoubtedly gets drawn against someone too early, like he has been in the last few slams? All of these things that he's putting into his bag now, will we be able to see them, and will he be able to execute them when he needs to, when he runs into Rafa again somehow in the fourth round, right? I think we're all waiting now.
We are, and that's the final test, isn't it? To beat one of the really big guys in a final. Like, that's it. And I mean in a really big tournament. It's not going to be too long, because we have seen, I think we saw his best level in that one set against Rafa Nadal at the French Open. And it was truly frightening to watch someone move the way that he can do and hit the ball as hard on both wings. And Rafa Nadal didn't know for a few minutes what was going on that tour, on that court. I mean, it obviously reversed itself and he got bageled in the final set. But, you know,
yeah.
give me this for 50 minutes or whatever he had. And that level is astonishing.
Andy Murray has drawn Hubi Hurkacz again in Vienna. Just to underline how effed he is draw-wise going forward. But yep, that's how it goes.
Well, at least it wasn't Francis Tiafoe again.
I know, seriously.
It keeps happening. How many times this year? 9 times.
Finally, big shouts to Ann Lee, winning the Tenerife Ladies Open, beating Maria Camila Osorio Serrano. Ann Lee will make her top 50 debut, which is awesome for her first title. I don't know if you saw the handshake bush between Camila Giorgi and Osorio Serrano in the semifinals, but holy shit, find that. Super weird. One of the weirdest handshakes I've ever seen. Would love to know the backstory, but that's that. That is all that happened in real tennis, or I mean, most of it. Apologies if we missed anything. When we come back, as always, it's our party shots.
Welcome back to Open Era. Devang, it's time for our parting shots, and I will kick one off with you that is not on the notes.
What?
But I want to hear your reaction.
Unbelievable.
Now stay with me here.
Okay.
And I want everyone to know that this is a troll, and I saw this earlier today and I found it very funny. I'm desperate to hear your reaction to this. Did Novak Djokovic get in on the ground floor of the PTPA just so he could oppose the vaccine mandate? We're talking tinfoil hat.
How many hats? How many Illuminati's out of 5 should I rank this? I think that's a solid 4 Illuminati. That's a 4 Freemasons society out of 5, I think. I non-jokingly, though, I do think that is a massive part of this. I do think the fledgling union that we currently have and this low vaccination rate, I think kind of go, they could work together to benefit each other, if that makes sense. I don't know how well the education is going with what they're doing. I know the ATP has put out some literature and saying, here's what we're trying to show these players, and there's been opportunities, but I feel like this is a big part of it. We can't shy away from it.
It's true. Devang, Roger Federer is out of the top 10 in the world. It was bound to happen. He is 40 years of age. He was knocked out by Hubi Hurkacz, who we need to do a whole episode on at some point because we love Hubi Hurkacz. Question for you, will Roger Federer ever make it back to the top 10 of the ATP rankings?
Well, question for you, did Holger Rune push him out of his wheelchair down a flight of stairs out of his way out of the top 10? Kids today, right? Joke. Okay, jokes is okay. Again, just to pile on, just to reconfirm, I'm anti-Brexit and now not against youth. I'm not anti-youth. Do I think you'll get back to the top 10, Bush? Really depends about the next couple months in terms of when he's able to start playing again. But no, obviously the answer is clearly no. I think if the rankings start working properly, and to back Holger Rune's comments, which we'll touch on, he shouldn't be anywhere around there. He should not be located anywhere around there. So when Fed does come back, and if he comes back, he's going to be gifted some things, but he'll do some Murray stuff. He'll have to do some Andy Murray stuff and possibly play Hubert Hurkacz 9,000 times.
Yes.
Should we do the, let's do the Holger Rune thing now, because I think we missed it a couple weeks ago and Priyanka asked about it in the Discord, but to get to it now, Holger Rune, who we've talked about him a bit, looks really good. He looks like potentially another one of these guys. He's from Denmark, but another one of these next gen guys who has potential to be a very good pro going forward. He's 124 in the world, but he took to Instagram saying he's really pissed at the rankings freeze and the fact that he would have been 62 in the world now if they were counted normally. He says, quote, "You know, guys, I'm a hardworking man. I normally never complain. This year, I fought very hard to achieve my goals of being top 100. ATP has continuously made it very difficult for me and many other young up-and-coming players because they have had a frozen ranking from 2019, meaning players on the ATP ranking still have their points from results made in 2019. He goes on, "Is this fair, etc.?" It's not. It's clearly not. I empathize in the sense that I think they were trying to appease a lot of people in a bad situation. We had this unprecedented pandemic. Who knew what the fuck was happening? Like, we had to freeze something. Some players shouldn't be punished for not being able to play. That being said, at this point now, it does feel like people are being able to coast on some things they did a long time ago. So Holger Rune, not totally with down with him in general. I think there's other stuff he's done on the court, yelling obscenities, offending people, and being a general teenager about it. But in this regard, I think Holger Rune is correct, Bush.
I don't disagree with anything he said. I really don't. But it did throw me for a loop when he said, "I'm a hardworking man," when he's 18 years old. And right? I've only thought of him as a boy for the time being. But aside from that, he's spot on. And it's got to be hard for a lot of people who are, you know, big time Federer fans and stands of that. But like, he's not saying anything inaccurate. It's an absolute mess. And you have legitimately people inside of the sport and tennis journalists who do not understand how this stuff works. And it's probably not great for the outside fan.
It's not. And I possibly back to something we talked to Pog about, but this wanting to hang on to some things, understandably justified, because it was a wonderful era. Beyond that, got to go beyond that, have to try new things, have to be comfortable doing new things, have to reward people properly. Fed not being in the top 10 is probably a sign, like, this should have happened a while ago, frankly, but here we are.
Yeah, the part of the Rune quote I thought was interesting as well, where, you know, "I love my tennis, but we have to compete on equal conditions." It's an interesting quote, right? Because it's sort of, if you watch Squid Game, that comes up a few times. Equal conditions don't exist. Just a reminder to everyone out there. It doesn't exist to Holger Rune either. But I think the things that you can control, like the technicalities of how a ranking system works, so that everyone kind of knows if you do these things, you will get to this point in the world. And this is just make sure the rules are fair for everyone. And when this kind of stuff happens, it feels like the rules are stacked against you. So you can definitely understand why there is so much animosity towards it.
Speaking of overcoming insurmountable odds, this week in 2007, we dedicated a whole damn episode to it, but we have to commemorate the chosen one, godson, David Nalbandian's incredible run in Madrid, the best of his generation never to win a slam. Nalbandian is the only man to defeat Novak, Roger, and Rafa at the same tournament. He also beat Delpo Bush in that same tournament. Go check the episode we did about it. We love Nalbandian, but I saw that in the news, Bush, and I got nostalgic as hell about it.
One of the best tournaments ever played by a non-Big Four member. Absolutely extraordinary to watch his timing. That court in Madrid, lightning fast. Mm-hmm. Lightning fast. And to watch someone have the ability to do what he did on that court is really, really incredible. it's one of the ones that I go back to periodically to watch the highlights of and just imagine how difficult it is to time the ball on a court like that to do what he did. Absolutely, completely and utterly incredible.
You want to go next? What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, you leave it to me to talk about Roger Federer again and him wearing a turtleneck.
I wanted you to bask in how disgusting you feel now talking about this billionaire and his wonderful turtleneck.
It is the sign of a villain, isn't it? I mean, how many, do you know anyone who wears a villain? Do you know anyone who wears a turtleneck in daily life?
So, I mean, it depends. So it depends. Are you classing a roll neck as a turtleneck? Because roll necks, Pep Guardiola is wearing a roll neck every day of the week.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Do you own a turtleneck, Dev?
You know what? I do. I have a couple. My neck gets kind of chilly. You need to protect your neck. I believe the great scholars once said, protect your neck. Bush.
The third line of Odyssey, is it
for
not?
For too long, you've been protecting the feet and the hands and issuing protection for the neck. And I think we're beyond that, frankly. So get with it or be left behind.
Roger Federer was inaugurated, according to the ATP Tour website, with a new tram in his honor, the Fed Express in Basel. And we talk about it because in the photos that he chose to share, he is wearing very, very close to a Bond villain outfit. I'm sure that cost about $9,000, that outfit. Anyway, cool story to see. Also, support public transit, so I'm definitely down for that. Even using your platform for good. Literally platform here. Double pun for everyone.
Do you see his shoes, Bush?
Are they on sport ones?
They are. He's got it, man. I don't know. I was kind of liking the fit, but I got some questions. We need to go ride that tram and do an episode on the tram, recording it there. We'll go to the Basel Open. That'll be an open air bucket list thing. But B, the fit was okay. The shoes, man. I don't know what Fed's. And we had Caitlin Thompson on here from Racket. She's been adamant about the washedness of those shoes. And I wasn't feeling them either, to be honest.
He's at a weird age, isn't he? 40 years old, where he's surrounded by young people and he's in a sport that I think tries to dress some of its younger players a bit more edgy, and the sport basically is very conservative. I think it's been shown up during the course of the discourse this week. It's a very conservative sport. I mean, it comes out of elitism and all this sort of stuff exists. It comes out of monarchies and higher rankings of society. So he sort of fits in this weird category of, I think he doesn't dress his age very well, I've got to say. I don't know this outfit works for him.
In his defense, and this is not my next parting shot, I was watching the Rafa Nadal Academy documentary on Prime, and there's a lot of Rafa interviews, and you see the way Rafa dresses as well, and it's very like in between phases. I feel like he's wearing like a suit jacket at times, and then like a turtleneck as well. It's very Roger-esque. Roger's in this as well. This is very interesting, actually. I would recommend you watch. It's a couple of episodes, but it tracks some of the Academy stars at Nadal's Academy, but it also follows Rafa coming in and out. Plus, a bunch of pros are there, like Casper Ruud is training there a bunch. You see Felix Auger-Aliassime, Bianca's training there, but it goes through how the Nadal started this Academy, why they started it. It's a very promotional feel at times, don't get me wrong, but that it was fascinating to see how Rafa would coach some of these kids, Bush, and how his uncle would too. His uncle, he's a jokester. He's just a jokester, like straight up. And I did not, you don't get that vibe, obviously, when you're watching him sitting mute in the box during matches. But I found their interactions fascinating. I found what Rafa's telling some of these prodigies. I would recommend it highly if you're a tennis fan. And even if you're not a Rafa guy, I would really recommend it.
You got me convinced now. I'm going to go and watch it.
Yeah.
You've sold me on it entirely.
Another thing, Ivan Ljubicic, Fed's coach, former top tenor, former bald G, hashtag play bald, quote on Twitter, I would pay extra money to be able to watch tennis from this angle. And he's, go to his Twitter, you'll see what he posted. It is that flat angle that the UTS loves, that we love, that I don't understand, Simon, why. And I saw someone say this on Twitter so eloquently, but we have to make the best seat in the house the one available for the most people, and that should be at home, right? Like, why shouldn't you be able to get this view at home when usually we're presented one of the worst views? It's one of the few sports that does that. It's really weird.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's a great angle to watch the sport from. It's strange that it's not more common throughout the rest of the tour. I do have to say, I know VR and mixed reality and all that sort of stuff is kind of dead, which is kind of a shame, really, because I think it had some potential. I'd love to watch a tennis match in VR. This is the first thing it made me think of, is just be in the front row and watch the sport. I think it'd be so cool.
MLB The Show, the baseball game, was doing some fascinating like VR stuff with simulations with pitchers and like being able to face Max Scherzer and trying to hit a home run off him. Like, imagine you were trying to face Novak Djokovic serving or Ash Barty serving or just playing a point. Like, how amazing that would feel.
Would be incredible. I'm down for it. Or just trying to return something like a Sam Groth 156. Exactly. 156, is that the record? I think it is.
On that note, my final parting shot, Ash Barty confirming the sad news. Her 2021 season is done. She will not be playing in Guadalajara. We mentioned to Bush, 5 titles on the year, a fantastic year, a premature end. Saw some people saying, should there be an asterisk on the year end number one, just because it's been that kind of year and you've had this rankings bollocks and nothing makes sense. But I'm like, what are you talking about, first of all? Because if anything that has been affirmed this year in the weirdest that it's been, Ash Barty's greatness is one of them. I'm not sure why we're even having this conversation, but no, there is no asterisk in my opinion at all.
No, I mean, this is bollocks. There's no story here.
Utter bollocks. I saw it and nearly threw my laptop out of the balcony I was sitting on. But we don't talk about it much. And I think Nick Kyrgios has kind of discussed this a bit when he was exiting the Laver Cup. The players of Australia, after that tournament, basically had to just leave forever and not go back. So I can understand how much of just a wild year it's been. And kind of wanting to shut it down a bit early. So all the power to Ash Barty. Hope to see her back winning huge titles in 2022. That's it for me, Bush. Anything party shot-wise left for you?
Nope. It's go to 2 challenges remaining, Dev. Nothing in the notes from you, so I'm excited to hear what it is from you.
You can go first. That means you go first.
Is that how it works, is it?
It does.
Gives you time to look one up.
I have one because I put my nationalism flag on for mine. Perhaps on the sport vein, I'll go first then.
Okay.
T20 World Cup action. We record this on Sundays. I think this Sunday was one of the better sports days ever in terms of like, you wake up and everything is on from beginning to end and we're in the middle of it. But the biggest one of the day, India, Pakistan, T20 World Cup. Pakistan has won. Not a shocking result, but that'll cause some tumult. But I do find it interesting. I think the cricket crowds are one of my favorite in sports, and you see more crowd shots than most other sports because of just the way the action is. And I think the general interactions between the two sets of fans was promising and welcoming and less bullshit, bravado, assholery. I know things are not obviously perfect at all in this relationship, but it seems like on this day in sport, in the stadium, it wasn't bad. So I think small victories and all that jazz. I don't like Narendra Modi's association with this team, but that's a conversation for another day. So I'll leave it there, Simon. Cricket, the beautiful game.
You know how some people talk and have talked over the last like 10 years about how sport isn't political? I encourage them to go and investigate the relationship between India and Pakistan.
I would like to encourage you to shut the fuck up. So that first, I'd encourage them to shut the fuck up, frankly, is the first thing I'd say. Second of all, yeah. Google anything.
Stop making sport so political.
Yeah.
India, Pakistan, please, and cricket. That's very funny.
You wrote down what you have, Simon. So I think it's a perfect end.
When the Union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no greater power anywhere beneath the sun. Come on, Dev. The Union makes us strong.
Let's go.
Striketober is here.
Which is season.
I just wanted to bring it up just to round the episode out to show some solidarity with all the folks, guys, girls, and our gender non-conforming folks out there who are on the picket line at the moment in the United States and in Canada. Not someone who's been on strike. It's a scary prospect, but having people standing next to you is pretty awesome. 100,000 people on strike in the United States. Another 1,600 people went on strike yesterday here in British Columbia for the Life Lab strike for the BC General Employment Union. It's an interesting time, right? And I think a lot of the headlines are being made by the Kellogg strike in, I believe it's in, is it in Michigan? I can't remember where they are. Is that right? Anyway, and the John Deere strike as well, which is happening. And I think a lot of people are sort of recognizing, especially workers, recognizing the power that they have at the moment because of where the pandemic has been, just what the global supply chain looks like in North America, is that so much of the just-in-time delivery method that exists and in terms of just the supply chain basically implies that if you walk out of your job or if you are you stand in solidarity with your fellow workers, those factories and those places of employment can't run because there is no stock. And I think that's being felt all across the United States. And you think about how globalization was designed to make it show that labor didn't have any power. So you could offshore all of that stuff and put it into places where labor had no power. And then you consider the roundabout way that this has happened, which is that the way to get around that is to do just in time. And then when you basically walk out from that and no factory can ship anything and you end up in a supply chain meltdown, like what's happened, pretty solid.
Yeah.
A lot of solidarity, a lot of power, Dev.
People are learning that all jobs are important, some more than others, not necessarily ones that require you to sit behind a computer and go into an office. And perhaps those jobs that are looked down upon are very damn important. And it's affecting people. And people are like, why doesn't anyone want to work at my diner or my restaurant or my store? And it's like, pay them a goddamn living wage and let's talk. But these actions are causing effects too, Bush. I saw the IATSE action for the film workers was effective as well. I think we also saw what this power can do in terms of opening some people's eyes to the fact that the John Deere strike is being led by some of the older employees in these factories, not the younger ones, because they're looking out for the younger brethren to get the same things that they got. So that's heartening as well.
Yeah, I mean, it comes along with the sort of anti-work rise that has existed. I think that subreddit is one of the fastest rising subreddits on all of that website. Reddit's a pretty right-wing website anyway, so to actually have a left-wing sort of position, or at least a socialist position, being so quickly up the rankings of that, it's quite exciting to see. I guess one just sort of final point on this is that inflation hit 4.4% here in Canada during this week, during some of the reporting that came out. And I know a lot of people were starting to get to the end of the year, and the start of next year is raises time, and it's a time when people can chat about what they're earning. And I saw a tweet earlier this week that basically said, like, if your boss says to you that your raise or anything that you're getting in terms of your salary is less than 4.4%, you should tell them to go and fuck themselves because they're telling you to take a pay cut. And I would encourage you to think about that very hard. Not that I can tell anyone what to do in terms of their workplace, but think about those words, please.
Perfect. We'll leave it there. Tell your boss to fuck themselves from Simon Bushnell himself. A reminder, we are on patreon.com/openera. Join the Discord, get the show early, get the show ad-free. We've had a bunch of new Discord arrivals. Shouts to Easy Ace Machine, new member of the Discord, but we have a lot of fun in there. So join the Patreon on a monthly basis and you get those awesome perks. Also, we are on twitter.com/openerapod, where we're tweeting throughout these tournaments. A reminder as well, if you could rate or review this podcast, that would be awesome for us. Really appreciate everyone that has done that. It means a lot to us. For producer Dylan on the ones and twos, and for Simon, thank you so much for listening to Open Era. We'll talk to you next week.